in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of Bison Report Radio. I am your host, Ross Uglum, and joining me this afternoon is the voice of NDSU women's basketball, Keith Brake. Keith, how are we doing, buddy?
I am doing great, Ross. Thanks for having me on.
Anything happened lately that anything we should touch on?
Oh, you know, it's been pretty ho-hum. You know, it was a fire drill to get the kids dropped off at the airport as a bunch of them were flying to different places for the holidays. But other than that, no, I can't think of anything in particular. Oh, yeah, that was in Kansas City after a 72-69 win over the Jayhawks. But other than that, I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, some of the pain from the end of the Kansas-North Dakota State men's basketball game, I think, washed away on Monday night, Monday afternoon, I guess. Let's start at the beginning, though. I mean, how cool was that? You guys, what did your kind of lead up to that consist of as far as when did you guys get in? Did you have a chance to kind of see KU's campus? Did you have a chance to get into the fog? What was just that whole experience like kind of in the birthplace of basketball?
Yeah, we left on Sunday morning, bus down to Lawrence, Kansas, stopped a couple times along the way, you know, get lunch and just, you know, stretch our legs a little bit. But we got there probably about 7 o'clock and we went straight to Allen Fieldhouse for shoot around and got the chance to take a few pictures and just, you know, peek around a little bit. And you can really take in the history of that place because, Ross, the bleachers in Allen Fieldhouse, I don't know if people know this because so many of these arenas that have so much history, they've been renovated a couple of times. There's newer amenities there. Most of Allen Fieldhouse is older than you and me put together. Like the bleachers are probably from the 50s or 60s and they've taken really good care of them. They've painted them. They've done good things with them. But like this facility is old and you can hear the echoes of, you know, Rick Pitino's Kentucky team coming in there in 89 and him getting teed up and throwing a towel on the floor and KU beating them by 55 in the early Roy Williams days. And you can feel the history when you walk into that place and it's pretty surreal. The floor is immaculate. Jory joked that, you know, you could probably eat off of it if you needed to, because they clean it like four times a day. It's meticulously taken care of. And Kansas is a school where basketball is what college football is at a place like Nebraska or at North Dakota State or at Alabama. Basketball is their thing. It is what they are good at. It's what they build their identity around. And you sense that from the moment you step inside the main arena of Allen Fieldhouse. Outside of Allen Fieldhouse, there's not really all that much. You know, the concourses are, again, it's an older facility. Like it's not anything super flashy. But we got there. We shot around. We went to the Oread, which, as my understanding, it's where every visiting basketball team stays. And it's right. It's like 5 minutes from the arena. And it's just a gorgeous facility, gorgeous hotel. They ripped out all the carpet and things for sanitary reasons because it's easier to clean. But it was a phenomenal experience. It was definitely a power conference experience that we got going on the road to take on Kansas. And we got a night of, you know, just team bonding on an illustrious historic floor, and then woke up the next morning. And honestly, like conversations I had with people, from KU that were, you know, media people, that they thought North Dakota State might have a shot. They thought pretty highly of the program that Jory was bringing in. And of course, all of them thought the world of Jory because Jory was there for a year and he obviously left a really strong impression on people down in Lawrence.
Certainly, yeah. It's like you know, playing football at Lambeau Field or playing basketball in the Hoosiers gym. Like that's it's Americana, certainly. For sure. Let's take a trip kind of all the way back to the beginning. Your first interactions with Coach Collins, because oddly enough, despite your, you know, contributions to the site, I believe this is your debut on Bison Report Radio, is it not?
I believe that's correct. Yes. Yeah. It's nice of you to slow play it for 4 years. We're really building up the hype there.
For sure. So kind of, you know, because this is a 35 to 40 minute medium, if you will, you know, what bring us all the way back. I mean, you were there for the Walseth years, and I don't need you to take 10 minutes to trash Marin Walseth. That's not the point here. But, you know, you were with North Dakota State when you lost four games for every game you won. And so your first impressions of Jory Collins and kind of the first bricks that were laid to get this thing to where it is now.
Well, I mean, you might remember this, Ross. The first brick that Jory Collins laid was Ryan Cobbins. That was, I think it was a week or 2 weeks after he got the job, Ryan signed a letter of intent to come play at North Dakota State as sort of a tacked on player to the recruiting class. And you see her background, you see, you know, the athleticism that she brings, and you say, okay, this is a really interesting player. And certainly once I saw her on the floor for the first time, I was like, yeah, she's got a lot of potential. And Jory will downplay, you know, some of the things that Ryan might bring, 'cause he doesn't want to, you know, just overwhelm people with hype, I don't think. But Ryan is a player who, she doesn't have one skill that just defines her game. It's not like she's a shooter, or, you know, she's a wing stopper, or she's this or she's that. She just does everything really solidly and has the ability to be a successful player in Division I college basketball because of that. That was the first player he brought in, and the first thing he was doing was working the phones. We had him in our old studio at Bison 1660 for his first radio interview on my show in the afternoon drive. I think it was 5 o'clock. He came in, sat down, suit and tie. I think he had just come from the press conference at the Shack, and sat down with us, talked with us the whole time. He's working the phones. He's talking to people. And I would imagine he was talking to coaches, talking to recruits, talking to anybody that could get him players. Because the thing about the end of Marin's tenure that I got to experience up close is that the camaraderie and like the culture among the players always seemed good. Like, even though the team wasn't good, the players were unified. The players were, you know, they had a sense that they were in something together, and that's valuable and that's important. And that's why when Jory took over, everybody got in a huddle and said, we're going to stick it out. We're going to try this out. They did have a player leave after the summer, right before the season began. But everybody stuck it out for that first year of Jory Collins. And that bond was good. And the issue wasn't necessarily the chemistry among the players or the unity among the players. It was finding difference makers. And the players that were brought in under the previous staff in general were solid role players. They were being asked to be much more than that. And that was part of the issue that North Dakota State ran into. And Jory changed that. I think he recognized immediately that the foremost thing he had to change was the caliber of recruit that NDSU was bringing in. So he went out and got some four-year transfers that have 3 years of eligibility left. Evan Hamling, Marie Olson, Katie Deaton, they're all sophomores. Abby Schulte is a freshman who's playing right away and playing really well for NDSU. And Kylie Straub doesn't see the floor as much, but has been able to hold her own so far. When she was asked against Green Bay, when Renia Hopkins and Heaven Hamlin got into foul trouble, she's been able to hold her own on the floor as well. So I think Jory immediately turned the talent level of the program up considerably, and that has been the biggest difference. And people have responded to his investment in the program by virtue of his investment in, you know, bringing these players in and believing these players can do these things, and, you know, accepting that he is going to challenge them at times, and he might get mad when they don't live up to his expectations, not because his expectations are unrealistic, but because he thoroughly believes that his players are capable of meeting those expectations and then some. So I'm really excited to see what the future holds for Jory, but he's a go-getter. He's a dynamo. He brings a ton of energy. His players feed off that energy, and they believe that they can hang with anybody in the country, not just because of their bond, but because they have the talent and they have the coaches to back them up.
Bring me back to that Wisconsin win, close loss last year. Bring me back.
Yeah.
That was a home game. A team that maybe wasn't very good, but that's the type of game that North Dakota State women's basketball fans were used to losing by 30, you know, and just not really being involved in that. And that's, for me personally, as someone who covers exclusively the, you know, as far as what my actual prerogative is given to me by my bosses, is men's basketball and football.
Sure.
That's when my ears perked up, was getting, you know, Twitter notifications that North Dakota State was tied late in the fourth quarter with Wisconsin, or was 2 points down late in the fourth quarter with Wisconsin.
I was actually playing that game back in my head during the second half of the KU game, because I remember, you know, Wisconsin scored late and Riley Newdell had a chance with a corner three at the horn, more or less, to win it. And she clanged it off the side of the rim. And like, North Dakota State inheriting a group that, like I said, was a lot of players who had some ability but were asked to do more than they were probably capable of doing on a winning, you know, like 20-win, 25-win basketball team at this level, were in it with a power conference program until the final seconds under Jory Collins. And they had been competitive against Wisconsin in the past, but it didn't come down to, you know, the final seconds, everybody watching and paying really close attention to what this team was doing. I was thinking about that during the KU game and thinking about how different this group was, because there was never a moment where it was, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, we're in a game with Kansas. There was never this wide-eyed excitement that, oh boy, we didn't expect to be here. They believed the whole way that they believed they should have been up by more at some points in that game. They had every belief that they could come in and beat KU on their floor and not have it come down to needing a bucket on the final possession of the game to win it. And that's exactly what happened, is they were able to execute their offense. They got some great plays late. You know, Emily Dietz made a great play off a scramble. She kind of bobbled a pass, but collects it on the baseline, turns and hooks at the shot clock horn. Ryan Cobbins with a little Bob Cousy behind the back dribble action, all in one motion, takes it to the rim and lays it in. And then they salted the game away at the free throw line. They hit their free throws with the game in the balance and were able to force Kansas to be the ones to play from behind. And when you're in that situation, as you know, you've seen so much basketball, being the trailing team in a situation where you have to foul almost constantly, even in a one-score game, three-point game, four-point game, it's a real challenge to scrape your way back in front of a game like that. So I think what they did was just execute in those critical moments earlier in the game, so that it didn't have to come down to the final shot. It didn't have to come down to an, aw, shucks, we were so close, but hey, look at what we're doing right now. We can be so much better. It was the moment where they got over the top and said, we are here to make some noise when it comes time for Summit League play to start next week.
Yeah, talk to me about not necessarily because you're not in the huddle, but what's the feeling and the vibe when you're down 18-5 at the first quarter break mark? Especially, and for those of you that didn't watch the game, but I think North Dakota State made zero field goals in the first quarter against North Dakota the prior game.
Correct.
So, what is everybody feeling like when it's 18-5 after one?
I think with the UND game, it's interesting that you bring that up. They kind of, because they were down, what, seven or six at the end of the first quarter, despite shooting 0 for 16. And they were doing everything else right. The shots just weren't going in. And I think everybody just dug into the game plan and said, okay, we're going to continue to do this, this, and this on defense. We're going to continue to run our stuff with the belief that eventually the shots are going to go in. And eventually, it took until the last 3 minutes of the game, but the shots started going in, and you know, free throw opportunities presented themselves, and Renia Hopkins did her thing off the bench, and they were able to force overtime and take the lead and win that game. And something similar did happen with the Kansas game. You know, they were 2 for their first 15. They scored on the first possession of the game, and then it was a 13-0 run, and Kansas cracked it open a little bit. But the belief was never it never wavered. Like, I never saw anybody just go, well, hell, I guess we just came down here for nothing. You know, they didn't, there was no shrugging. There was no sagging shoulders. There was obviously frustration because, you know, offensively nothing was going for them, but they believed kind of, again, that their stuff was going to work. They just had to give it time. And the big element of that is the ability to get the 3-point shot going at times with Marie Olsen and with Olivia Skibble in particular in this game. And you've also got Michelle Geislerova, who's one of the most prolific 3-point shooters in the history of the program, who's just kind of lurking in that lineup and in that rotation and almost like a shark. And she'll flash at any moment and knock down three threes. And suddenly, you know, it's a 12-0 run or 11-0 run. And Michelle's a big part of it. Stuff like that can happen with this lineup. But on Monday, it was Olsen hitting a couple big shots, including one at the end of the first half. Skibble knocked down a couple of big threes, including one with a hand in her face. But also, they were able to work them open a little bit and give them some really, really high percentage looks that good jump shooters are going to knock down. And this team can put 4 3-point shooters on the floor at any given time, depending on the lineup they want to construct. I mean, if they want to try Marie Olsen at the five, which I don't think Jory really would want to do necessarily, but he could, you can put 5 3-point shooters on the floor, 5 legitimate 3-point threats on the floor at any given time. That's something that North Dakota State hasn't been able to do really in the time since I got here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's an impressive group when, as you mentioned, Geislerova, one of the top shooters, scorers in program history. She can have an 0-for-6 night against the Jayhawks, and North Dakota State can still come out with a win because they've got other players that can contribute. And two of those I want to talk about, one that you just mentioned, because I want to talk a little bit more about the building blocks of the program. And, you know, oftentimes, which is a double-edged sword too sometimes, but oftentimes, you know, college, high school, or high school seniors are not the way to turn things around quickly. And Heaven Hamling and Marie Olsen, I think, with a high school senior that was darn ready to turn things around quickly in Ryan Gobbins. But Heaven and Marie have been a big part of taking this group now to that next level where, boy, I would assume after they were receiving votes before beating Kansas, that's not going to change anytime soon. This team, this program has gone from one of the bigger jokes, frankly, sad as it is, but one of the bigger jokes in the Fargo-Moorhead sports area to, frankly, outside of maybe the wrestling team and the softball team, the highest profile program nationally. And I don't mean highest profile as in, of course, more people know about the football team and et cetera, but this is the football team is, and even as I say that, that's not true. They did receive one final vote in the AP poll. In the top 25. But the point that I'm trying to make is that week in, week out, men's basketball doesn't have a great shot at receiving top 25 votes. I don't know if they ever have. Maybe that Taylor Braun year potentially. But football very, very rarely receives top 25 votes. Occasionally, if they'd go undefeated and win the FCS championship with a win over a power five, then, you know, a couple voters would put them in the end of the year top 25. This women's program, and has frankly shown South Dakota and South Dakota State, the upside for this women's program is truly a top 25 program in the country. And they're there. I mean, they're certainly approaching there. People are voting them there. Talk to me about Marie and Heaven.
Well, I think, first of all, the mid-major scene in general in women's sports, but especially women's basketball, is healthier than its men's counterparts. I feel like there's an ability for players to be competitive at the top end of those mid-major leagues. You know, you talk about the Summit League and what South Dakota and South Dakota State have done with Dawn and with AJ. How about what Tanya Warren's done at Northern Iowa? That's a program that's really well thought of. Look at Drake and the success they've had. Look at Missouri State was the number 20 team in the country in the last AP and USA Today coaches polls. That will change because they just lost to South Dakota State at home. But there are teams. Green Bay has been a perennially well thought of, successful mid-major program. There's a little bit more room for those programs to break in against, I think, the middle class of the power conference of programs in women's college basketball than maybe there is in men's college basketball. But with Heaven and with Marie, I mean, you see two players that have very different skill sets from one another, because Marie is a tremendous athlete who can also play basketball at a really high level. And Heaven is just flat out a baller. Like, she's not going to, you know, wow you with her verticals. She's not going to wow you with her, you know, the dreaded three cone time or anything like that, that we apparently use to dismiss or evaluate athletes now. And we miss guys like DK Metcalf because of it. But Heaven Hamling is not a running, jumping, explosiveness athlete, but she's got a really good handle. She's got a really good jump shot. She's got really good vision for the floor, and she can see where the passing lanes open up to create other opportunities for her teammates. And that's what makes her such an effective point guard. Marie is interesting partly because, like I said, she's just a tremendous athlete. She's a really good defender on the interior, which is something that North Dakota State hasn't necessarily had a ton of outside of playing the five, is that you don't have that 6'2" 4 that can move all over the floor. And how many teams in the Summit League really do have one of those? Well, North Dakota State has one now. South Dakota State usually has one. South Dakota will have one every now and again. North Dakota might have one in Julia Fleece, depending on what lineups they put out there. But Marie is a player who brings length and defensive acumen to that position that has been missing from players who work just as hard over the past few years. And the player I'm specifically thinking of is Riley Nudell. Riley played her butt off for 4 years at North Dakota State. And Jory Collins, and I said this, and I would agree that, like, if he's coaching this team and, you know, he could get 11 of one player, 12 of one player, hit that player would be Riley Nudell. But she was also 5'11". And, you know, she wasn't quite as explosive of an athlete as Marie Olsen is. And that changes what you can do in terms of how you set up your man defense, how you set up your matchups to create problems for teams on the other end, because Marie is a threat from all over the floor. She can shoot from the perimeter. She can post up. She can do whatever you need her to do. And I look at a player like that and say, she just scored 11 points. I think it was 11 against Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse, against a power conference opponent, on basically 3 months of practice since she got here. She's been banged up. She's been, you know, unable to practice at times because of injuries. And so she's been limited in what she's been able to do for Jory since she got onto campus. And for her to be in a position where you have such limited build-up times, it's limited development time, and still be able to contribute meaningfully and significantly, I feel like Marie is going to be a real problem for teams in the Summit League when we get to that point, when we get to, you know, next week at Western Illinois, you get rolling against Omaha, you get rolling against North Dakota, against Denver. I don't know how many of those teams have a player that can match up with a Marie Olsen. It's going to be a real, real challenge, I think, to keep her bottled up as she starts to find her stride with this program. And these two players together create a really exciting nucleus when you consider the fact that they still have two more years after this. I think, I guess technically it's three because everybody's getting the year back. So yeah, they can all apply for the waiver. Yeah, everybody's getting the year back, so they can all apply for that waiver. They'll probably all get it. They could potentially be playing for three more years here. And that is a really exciting prospect, I think, if you're looking at this program and what they can build and what Heaven Hamling as a facilitator, as a ball handler, and Marie Olsen as a defensive anchor can do for this group.
So, yeah, with Marie, as the great Michael Jordan has said, the ceiling is the roof. We don't really even know how good she can be.
Right. I'm not sure that she knows how good she can be, because I see a player though that has a ton of potential. I think Jory sees the same thing. Otherwise he wouldn't have brought her here from SMU. She's a player that could be really, really special. I think they're all going to be pretty good. To be quite honest with you, I am not by any means looking at these players going, yeah, no, not her. No, there's a ton of potential here for all of these players to contribute something meaningful, including Emily Behnke, who didn't play against Kansas. But I looked at I just kind of looked at the roster last year and I said, OK, Emily Behnke was a late add to the recruiting class by the previous staff. She came to North Dakota State for mainly as much for basketball as for academics. I wondered if they were going like if she was going to be here long term, if she was going to be part of this new coaching staff, this new program that Jory was trying to build. And all throughout her redshirt year, all I heard was this young woman is a tremendously raw basketball player that we can mold. She's a raw athlete. She has a great platform to build on. We think she can contribute something meaningful for us by the time we are done with her development. And, you know, she's not going to play a lot right now because Emily Dietz is a budding star in this league. But I think she has the ability to be maybe not necessarily even a starter. I mean, she could be down the road. I don't know, but she has the ability to do something that contributes to this basketball team, despite being a player who is almost a complete blank slate in terms of basketball skills when she came here. And I think it's really exciting that you can see upside in every single player that is on this roster right now and believe that upside is achievable.
I want to get into the end of the Kansas game and maybe the ride home and just some of that stuff. Bring the fans behind the scenes in a second, but the last player that I really want to get into, and it's just because it's something that has kind of warmed my heart a little bit. Emily Dietz went through the stuff. She was part of, and they needed her to play early. And so she's seen some losses, man. She has had her butt kicked up and down the floor. And then, you know, to watch this revolution from Coach Collins, bringing in, you know, more talented teammates, bringing in teammates that get along better with each other. Just talk about kind of what this has to be like for Emily, the type of leader, type of person she is, what she's given to this program, because as these cool things happen, the sweep of Green Bay at home, the comeback win over North Dakota, and then this kind of their crowning moment so far, with frankly, honestly, in addition to the Summit League tournament win, she is the person that I find that I'm most happy for, that moves me the most, is because, like, you know what? This girl freaking deserves this.
I absolutely. You know, I talked to Dietz last night because she was one of the two players that came home with us on the bus. And I asked her, I said, did you ever think that when you signed up to play here, you would experience what we got against Kansas? And she said, no. And like, you could tell, like, it was a moment that was going to stick with her for the rest of her life. She and Michelle Geislerova in particular, those two have been through so much that you love to see them get an opportunity to be part of a basketball team that's not just competitive, you know, that's not just a team that believes they can hang with anybody, but a team that can actually go out and beat the brakes off of some really talented basketball teams, because they are players who have worked so hard. They brought so much to this program that, you know, you want them to get that payoff. And I was really disappointed that Riley Newdell didn't get to be part of that experience, because she was kind of the same way. You know, she always, you know, just lowered her head and worked hard and grinded and did everything that she was asked to do. And, you know, she was this close to 1,000 points by the time she got to the end of her career, didn't quite get it. And, you know, she also was part of a team that, you know, they won that Summit League tournament game against Denver, but I would have loved for her to have had the opportunity, and it's just, you know, eligibility and the way things worked out that she couldn't be part of this team, but she graduated. But I would have loved for her to have had that opportunity too, because these players put in so much work and they go through so many tribulations and so many disappointments and so much futility. And like I said earlier, like you could tell at the end of the previous staff and their run that, I mean, yeah, there were some players that didn't want to be there, but the players who were there at the end clearly bonded with each other and had a great relationship with each other. And they wanted to be part of the solution to turning this program around because they had been through the worst of it and they didn't let it change them. And Emily and Michelle maybe in some way carry a little bit of the legacy of some of those former teammates of theirs. And I think it's great to see what they can contribute because Michelle's kind of in the same sense that Heaven Hamling is not a you know, world-class running jumping athlete. Michelle doesn't have a blow you away vertical, but she is a world-class jump shooter. She can shoot threes better than any human being that I have seen in person play college basketball. And she has the ability to contribute something meaningful and significant to a team that can win a lot of basketball games. Emily Dietz is the same way. You know, I was talking to someone who was surprised that Dietz had the career that she had or has had at North Dakota State. And wondered when, you know, her commitment was announced, if she was actually going to stick. And she was a player who, like, I didn't really get to see. The first time I saw her was the Florida International game because she had a micro fracture in her foot and didn't get to play. And you could tell, like, there was something there. Like, there was something there that could return into a player who was really successful at the Division I level. And to see them go through so many of the lows and be a part of a program that's so down, as downtrodden as any program in the country for so long, to see them go from the ultimate, I would honestly say it's the ultimate nadir of the college basketball experience, and that's losing at Purdue Fort Wayne by 20 points, to go from that to what they had last year, winning a game in the tournament, the Summit League tournament, to this year, you know, being a program that people are buzzing about around the college basketball community. I love that it happened for them, and I can't wait to see what they do with the next 16 to 18 games.
Absolutely. So take me behind the curtain. I'd love to get kind of just your perspective as the play-by-play guy and a tier one, a tier one Corona medical receiver, as someone who's really kind of in the trenches, just the last 2 minutes of that game and the celebration and the ride home and just all of it, just kind of, without obviously divulging any family secrets, but I mean, just bring us kind of behind the scenes, if you will.
Honestly, it was pretty ho-hum. It was like a typical road win. It was very business-like when we got done. I broke everything down, and Jory didn't show anything extraordinary in our post-game interview. Heaven Hamling, who was our player of the game, she talked like it was just another win. Like that sounds ridiculous, but they treated it like it was just another win. And everybody packed up, threw stuff on the bus. Some players went home with, you know, Ryan Cobbins went home with her family because she lives in the area. So she just stayed there for the holidays and was going to come back after the break. And so we took the players that didn't go with their families, got on the bus, went to the airport. And there were some emotional see you laters. You know, I mean, none of it's goodbye, obviously. There were some emotional see you laters. Some people were sad to part ways for the time. And then there were four of us on the bus that went back to Fargo in the overnight hours. And honestly, while it's an incredible achievement to beat a power conference program on their home floor, I think there is still a hunger and a belief among the players on this team, among the staff on this team, that this is not, they're not over the top yet. They're not over the top of the mountain yet. They are not to the pinnacle of what they think they can be just yet. And that's maybe the most exciting part, is that you go beat Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse and you go, yeah, that was a nice win. It was a good win. We played all right. We could have handled their press better, but we did all right. It's just very, you know, it's kind of a shrug. It's like, we won the game. You know, what more is there to it than we won the game? You know, they didn't treat it like they won a conference championship. And it was interesting that Jory said that to me back in March. He said, you know, I don't want us jumping up and down and hooting and hollering for winning, you know, a first round game of the tournament, even though it's been 11 years since North Dakota State did that. Said, we're going to save that enthusiasm for when we're cutting down the nets. They celebrated the Kansas win. They enjoyed the Kansas win, but the eyes are still very much on the ultimate end goal. And that end goal is still a conference championship. And until they get that, then every win is just another win, whether it's South Dakota State, it's Kansas, it's Green Bay, it's UMKC, whoever it is. A win is just another win for this program until they're cutting down nets.
I think that might be maybe the thing that most defines the Jory Collins era, honestly. The fact that they went and beat, you know, his old squad, first Power 5 win for this program in 13 years, and everybody just acts like, yep, we game planned to win, and we won. So that's that. That's what happened.
Pretty much. That's pretty much what it was. I mean, it was, you know, the emotions were not, and I'm sure there were very intense emotions inward, and I'm sure some people got emotional, and I would not blame them if they did. But, you know, it's still just another win. It's like we had a game plan. We came out. We executed the game plan. We don't really care who the opponent is. We don't care if it's Kansas. We don't care if it's, you know, you could put Brianna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, and Kia Nurse and Paige Buchers and whoever else on this on one team. Like you could put Diana Taurasi on the other side, and if we win, it's like, hey, well, we won a basketball game. You know, it's like they're that kind of a team that's clearly focused on an end goal that they are aware that they are only beginning to approach. And I don't think that's just true for the ultimate goal of the conference championship. It's also true for the goal of making these players, this group of players, whether that's really good jump shooters like Guys LaRova and Olivia Skibble, or it's really good interior players like Emily Dietz, or it's players that just have a good all-around game, like no frills, no super strengths, no super weaknesses, good all-around player like Ryan Cobbins, whoever it is, they are committed to getting to the ultimate goal of conference championships and personal and team excellence. And when you have a group that is looking at those things, is taking the long view of things, then beating Kansas is not even close to the end. We are maybe at the end of the beginning, but we are far from the end.
All right. Phenomenal stuff, Keith. I really appreciate the time. And we will have to not wait quite so long to get you back on Bison Report Radio. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. And go Bison.